KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to this edition of Technology Bites, where we will be broadcasting strong and well and without any kind of problems.
The perfect show. Welcome to the perfect show. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
Perfect Joe Barrett.
And
Groovehouse.
Yes.
Not so perfect.
All right, so who can tell me what the heck this whole Gamergate thing is?
Gamergate.
Crap. I don't know. I did read the stuff about the swatting.
Yeah.
That was disturbing.
Which swatting?
Well, that's bogus. So the kid getting all the jail time?
Oh.
No, but the person actually getting swatted wasn't bogus.
Well, he was playing the video game, and the camera caught the whole thing?
Yeah, that was real.
Okay.
Yeah, I had actually not heard of that until I saw that video, but I guess it's been going on for a while now that sort of thing is happening.
Are they getting beat up while they play? Their parents are beating them? What's going on?
Yeah, so don't do this. So swatting, like I guess back in the 70s or back in the 80s, when I was a kid, the worst thing you could absolutely do was like order pizza for the neighbors or something, and they didn't order pizza. So now people are calling in like saying, hey, there's a hostage situation or there's a bomb.
They're spoofing the phone numbers. So what happens is instead of a pizza delivery guy
going knock, 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 you get ski masks and semi-automatic weapons. Yeah, you're saying get on the ground.
They're using Skype and proxies to try to hide where they're calling from.
Wow.
And claiming that they're basically doxing somebody to get their information to find out where they're actually located.
And then
calling 911 or the police department there and saying that they've done something horrible, a hostage situation, whatever. They're going to do something to more people, whatever, to get the SWAT team to go to that location and do a lockdown and come in with guns and knock everybody on the ground. And
so yeah, there was a guy that was actually playing was some first person shooter, and he had a webcam
going. I think he was
playing
Call of Duty something.
Yeah, Call of Duty on him, which is kind of ironic. And then behind him, I guess he's in an office building. People are going room to room, clearing rooms, and you can see the whole thing go down, you know, on the webcam.
But he's got his headphones on, so at first he doesn't really realize what's going on.
I think I'm being swatted.
This game's really good.
And then he kind of hears it, and he's like, "Uh-oh, what's that?"
But how did he know what was happening to him?
Well, because in that community, that's a known thing that happens. And so he was like, at some point, like right before they got to his door, he's like, he's kind of smiling about it. He's like, "I think we're being swatted." And then about he hears them like outside his door. And so he's starting to turn around. He's already putting his hands up. And and then they knock in the door.
Wow. Of course, he's got the camera on his Xbox or whatever his gaming console going. So it's got the game on it, and then there's a little camera there, so you can see the whole thing going on.
So swatting is now a verb.
Swatting's been a verb for several years now. There's been a couple of incidents of it happening or allegedly happening because between right-wing Tea Partiers and liberals.
The Snopes thing that went around was supposedly some kid actually got caught for it and was served out like a 21-year prison sentence, and that's the bogus part. So
that was like the 15-year-old kid or whatever in Louisiana.
It's still, we really don't want to do that because, the pizza delivery guy isn't going to accidentally shoot someone showing up at a house. So it's life and death kind of thing.
All right. Well, welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. Please don't swat us. And you can visit us online at geekradio.com. You can also hang out in the IRC, irc.cuckoo.com. I said irc.cuckoo.com.
Cuckoo. Do we know if the...
Sorry, I'm looking up
he's
swatting.
Watching, yeah, he's watching
I'm looking
the back
up
door.
Swatting now.
Do we know if the broadcasting is going well now?
I did.
Unlike last week?
I did hear in from a lot of people that tried to tune in and could not.
It was messed up last week. Yeah,
where
it was.
We were sitting here thinking it was calling us.
We're
going to
pretend that that's the reason why we had low attendance.
That's why. That is why. It's not because we're unloved.
All right.
Mostly.
Well, I didn't get a litany from Dwayne. Dwayne Bradley, the station manager, was in the station today. And last week he complained about the, because we get the signal from the broadcast studio to the transmitter via the internet.
Although we didn't used to.
No.
Somebody built a building, I guess, right?
Somebody built a building in front of us. We're like one of the last radio stations in the world, maybe. We used a microwave beam to get our signal to the tower, and now it requires direct line of sight, and that's been blocked by new construction between us and the transmitter. So now we're delivering over the internet. And as you know, if you've listened to Technology Bites with any regularity, that
perfect internet, perfect show.
We have some trouble with our internet connection, so we have trouble getting our signal to the transmitter, and so last week especially was just really horrible. So we're going to hope for a better show tonight, and we'll see how that goes.
There was Pete actually sounded better last week than...
Oh, jeez. That's because my Skype signal actually goes to the transmitter first.
Yeah, because after the show... I went into a room here in the studio, or not in the studio, but in the building, I guess, where they have actually radio tuned into the station. And yeah, it was bad. Like it would play for about a second to a half second to a second, and then it would cut out for a second to 2 seconds.
Yeah.
And it just kept doing
it.
It was
painful to listen to.
It was unlistenable completely.
Can't we just get a bigger microwave to where the people are like, "Man, it sure is hot in here"? Because we were here first, They're moving to their building where the microwave was. That's
unfortunately, I think property law is that when you buy a piece of land, you own the land plus
the airspace
above it for a certain height. I don't know what that height is. But
cutting a hole in the building, speaking with the architects.
At least
cool
you do until they can figure out some way to mine that air, and then they'll take that right away from you, just like, mineral rights.
Eminent air domain.
Yep.
Yeah. We own the water above you. Actually, some places...
No, they're trying
to collect the rainwater.
They're trying to do that with water right now. They're trying to monetize water. That's part of the reason that what's that guy's name? The wildcatter, the old wildcatter from Texas.
Boots.
Boots.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
cool.
That's why he bought up a whole bunch of
Red something in that.
Well, Red Adair was Red the Adair. Firefighting. They were the ones that would come in and put out wildfires.
What'd they buy? What'd they do?
T-Boone Pickens or whatever.
What'd he buy?
He bought up a whole bunch of land and or mineral rights up in North Texas, supposedly with the plan that eventually he would own the water rights.
Oh.
And then, Water's a privilege, not a right.
Well, there's ongoing dispute on that really, really old treaty between Oklahoma and Texas for the river that kind of, you know, who has the water rights to that. And they're calling into question the treaty that was signed back in the 1800s as to its validity.
Oh, well, are we going to go to war with Oklahoma?
They'll start that war back up.
I think we could just sneak through Louisiana and then just go push north.
Our first line of defense is Dallas.
We're willing to sacrifice that.
Well, we got to go. Dallas will probably join Oklahoma. We'll have to go through them to get to the water or something. All right. So anyway, we're going to be on the air here with you tonight, hopefully broadcasting a solid 100,000 watts or whatever it is that we broadcast at for 2 hours.
It's at least 70 watts.
Yeah. If you can't hear us, raise your hands.
And keep it to yourself.
If you can't hear us, raise your hands. Come on now. All right. So the phone number, which we will be answering a little bit later on, is 713-526-5738. So if you want to be on the air with us tonight, that is the number you will call. And we'll be happy to let you participate in tonight's episode of Technology Bites, your computer resource show every Wednesday night. For now, we're going to go to San Antonio, do the Technology Bites Info Shot with Peter Hughes. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bites Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Down on the floor! No, actually, I haven't been swatted. This is the other massive kind of geek-oriented in certain ways or technology hacker-oriented stories. The giant one that I'm sure everybody in the world has heard about the whole thing with the large number of celebrities who images that they made privately or whatever have started appearing online on image boards like 4chan and, Reddit and AnonIB. And, you know, obviously we're not talking about, you know, I'm not that interested in the, you know, where they are or that kind of stuff. The thing that seems more interesting and much less covered in the news is how this actually was done. You know, I noticed that if you watch the big news, then there's vague things. They mention iCloud and, you know, does this mean the cloud isn't secure and those kinds of things. But I did find this article. It was linked to from Daring Fireball, and it's a guy's blog. It's called New Web Order. And this guy seems to have really kind of looked at it and gone through it pretty thoroughly and has some interesting things to say about it. You know, it sounds like there's about 100 celebrities whose information was compromised. There's a list of celebrity names was published, you know, that says who they are. And it was serving as something like a sales brochure to get people to pay money to get the pictures. And what the guy says in his article is that after the story broke, he spent some time immersed in the crazy, obsessive subculture of celebrity nudes and revenge porn, trying to work out what they were doing, how they were doing it, and what you could really learn from that. Which, you know, there should be more journalism along those lines, but instead we have the, like, people who say you're blaming the victims if you say don't put your nude pictures on your phone, and the people who, you know, think it's all fine, and the ones who try to raise the point that, you know, this is what lack of privacy looks like, and the NSA is doing the same thing to large numbers of us. It's just not published on the, you know, it's just not publicized like this. Anyways, he has a list of things. He says that what we see in public with these hacking incidents seems to only be scratching the surface. There are entire communities and trading networks where the data that's stolen remains private and is rarely shared with the public. The networks are broken down horizontally with specific people carrying out specific roles, loosely organized across a large number of sites, both ClearNet and DarkNet, with most organization and communication taking place in private. You know, like email or instant messages. The goal, he says, is to steal private media from a target's phone by accessing cloud-based backup services that are integrated into iPhone, Android, and Windows Phone devices. To access the cloud-based backup requires the user's ID, password, or an authentication token. So the roles these networks break down, the roles that people tend to play in them, is, he says, one, users who scour Facebook and other social media looking for targets and collecting as much information as possible. Data collection includes utilizing public record services and purchasing credit reports. Obtaining data on a target includes setting up fake profiles, friending or following friends of the target, being persistent with extracting information that might help answer secret questions, approaching friends of the target, etc. The second is users who use that target data to retrieve passwords or authentication keys. There are numerous methods and there are for that, and most of them have tutorials available online. The most common are RATs, R-A-T-s, phishing password and phishing password recovery and password reset. RATs are simply remote access tools that the user is either tricked into installing through private messages or in an email, as a link in an email or an attachment, or that someone close to the target will install on their phone or computer if they have physical access. You know what? Everybody knows what phishing is. They send the target an email with a password reminder or reset that tricks the user into entering their password into a site or form the attacker controls. Password reminders gaining access to the user's email account and then using that to have a reminder link sent to the to access the cloud storage. In other words, basically doing like a password reset that goes to the email address. Password reset is answering the date of birth and security question challenges, often easy to break using publicly available data, especially if you're talking about a celebrity. Birthdays and favorite sports teams, etc., are often not secrets. The next group of users, you know, so there's those are the fishers, the ones who get the data. Then there are users who take a username and password or authentication key and then rip the cloud based rip the cloud-based backup services using software and tool chains such as Elcomsoft EPRB. The software is heavily pirated and supports being able to dump an entire backup set, including messages and deleted photographs. That's important. And then finally, collectors aggregate the data stolen by other users and organize it into folders. The two most popular services to use are Dropbox and Google Drive. The collectors will create preview images for each set and email them around to their contacts. Email addresses for collectors or those willing to trade or sell are available by referral, usually via somebody offering a hacking or ripping service. So the one of the sources, then he says that the frequent source of new leads for targets seems to be newcomers who know somebody they want to hack and have stumbled onto one of the networks offering these services via search terms or else through a forum, you know, that they found. The new contributor will offer up a Facebook profile link plus as much information as was required by the hacker to break the account, plus possible assistance in getting a RAT installed if required. It's the most... and I agree on this, it was one of the most unsettling aspects of these networks, is that there are people out there who are turning over data on friends and their social networks in exchange for getting a dump of their private data. So he went through months worth of forum posts, image board posts, private emails, replies for requests for services, etc. Nowhere was the Find My Phone API brute force technique, which was revealed publicly and exploited in iBrute, mentioned. It doesn't mean it wasn't used privately by the hackers, but you know, so you hear all these people talking about iCloud and you talk about the Find My Phone bug, but it doesn't sound like that was what was used, that mostly this was social engineering, recovery resets, rats, and phishing to use. iCloud was the most popular target because picture roll backups are enabled by default and iPhone's a popular platform. Windows Phone backups are available on all devices but are disabled by default. The author of this couldn't find a statistic, while Android backup is provided by third-party applications, some of which are targets. And then there's also Google Plus does have backup functionality for photos uploaded via the app. Apple accounts, he says, were particularly vulnerable because the recovery process, password requirements, and ability to detect if an email address has an associated iCloud account. Basically, to sum it up, the on Apple, there are ways that you can find out if the email address they use for iCloud is their email address, and so you can validate the email account without even necessarily first getting into iCloud. And there he actually shows there's an email address or there's a URL that you can post an email address to, and you'll get back a response indicating if it is a valid account or not, with little or no rate limiting. And he says that's a bug, and that's true. So the it sounds like the main thing on these celebrity hacks, or frankly hacks that you'd use on anybody, the number one in order of popularity and effectiveness, the number one was password resets. The number two was phishing email. Number three was hacking email accounts and doing password recovery. And then the last was social engineering, installing software on people's machines and that stuff. So, you know, the thing to know is once they have access to the account, they have access to everything. They can locate the phone, retrieve messages, recover deleted files and photos, remote wipe the device, and more. You know, the hackers in this celebrity case apparently focused on private pictures, but they had complete control of the accounts for some period of time. Two-factor authentication for iCloud is useless in preventing passwords or authentication tokens being used to extract online backups. Two-factor authentication is used to protect account details and updates. So that would not, you know, people say, you know, go to two-factor authentication. Unless iCloud makes changes, that's not going to solve the problem. And then he says that there's an insane amount of hacking going on. On any day, there are dozens of forum and image board users offering their services. While many of those offering to rip a loan based on being provided a username and password are scammers, they will steal that data and sell it or trade it. The operational security of the average user in those networks is apparently low, which should mean that law enforcement could maybe do something about it. The darkest forums provide a lot of tips in terms of the hacking steps and also provide databases of passwords, users, and docs. But in terms of distributing content, are usually a step behind the publicly available image boards. They're definitely more resilient in terms of keeping content up once it's published and might become more popular with users if more data is leaked. Overchan and Torchan have in the past day or longer been full of new users requesting darknet links to the leaked content, and they receive them. So there's more to this article. If you go to Daring Fireball and look for the notes on the celebrity data theft, it goes into even more detail than that. And this is the kind of stuff that, frankly, you know, somebody should be doing a long form article and talking about, talking about the real details about this and looking at what people can honestly do to protect their data. Just in general, let alone because it's not just limited to celebrities. Obviously, obviously that means there's a real problem. And on better news, this one's kind of funny because I mean it's gone from a joke to increasing popularity. The phablet, the large screen, you know, the larger screen smartphone. According to a new forecast from the International Data Corporation, worldwide quarterly smart connected device tracker, worldwide phablet shipments, which is smartphones with screen sizes that are 5.5 to under 7 inches, will reach 175 million units worldwide in 2014, passing the 170 million portable PCs expected to ship during the same period. Next year, total phablet volumes will top 318 million units, surpassing the 233 million tablets forecast to ship in 2015. While they're a new category device, first picking up volume in 2012, the pressure that the category has placed on the tablet market has already been clearly observed as the growth of smaller 7-inch tablets has begun to slow. IDC expects more consumers to shift back towards larger-sized tablets with their next purchase. However, that trend hasn't made up for the decreased shipment of smaller sizes, which has lowered the forecast for the tablet market. So basically, people are buying a big phone and not needing or feeling like they need a tablet, and so they don't buy one. So that's an interesting new development. And then there's here's a new, you know, another tablet development that's kind of interesting. The Acer has announced some 8-inch tablets that are not, that are fairly, I think cheap would be the word to call it. The thing that's interesting about them is they released 3 8-inch tablets, but you get your choice of whether you want to have an 8-inch tablet running Windows 8.1 or a tablet that looks identical to it running Android, and they both run on the same hardware. It's $150. The $150 Iconia 1.8, which comes with Google Android 4.4 pre-installed, has a quad-core Intel Atom processor with an 8-inch 1280 by 800 display, which that's not a bad display. The Iconia Tab 8W, also expected to retail for $150, has the same hardware configuration but runs Windows 8.1. The only difference is that the One Tab 8 will come in a variety of colors, I guess, versus the Tab 8W, which is the Windows one. They also announced a 10-inch tablet, Android tablet, the Iconia Tab 10. There's no Windows version there, perhaps because it's using a quad-core MediaTek processor. That has a 1080p display and a micro HDMI port on the side, which makes a convincing bargain at $200. So it's getting hot in the sub $200 tablet market, and I guess part of that is because of pressure from more people buying phablets. You know, and then with your phablet, so now while we're doing all this multi, you know, Windows tablet or Android tablet, Logitech has announced a new keyboard. So we're into – this is kind of – from here on out, it's all new stuff. So, you know, I don't know that there's like the big one new thing like I often do in the news. This one's got – is just full of new stuff. Logitech has announced a new – it's a generic-looking compact Bluetooth keyboard. But the thing that it does differently is it can connect to 3 devices simultaneously, including Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, and even Chrome OS devices, and has a dial on it that lets users change which device is being controlled. So that means you can just, you know, it, I guess in a sense it's sort of a, you know, keep a, like a mini KVM for, you know, multiple devices. It looks like it's going to be around $50. So if you use a tablet, like, you know, if you like to have your tablet and your computer, or have a laptop, a desktop, and a tablet going at the same time, and you want to just use one keyboard, this could be the device for you. It might be useful for you, and it's interesting that this is sort of the first one to come out with this sort of multi, because usually they're either they pair with one device, and if you have more than one, you're kind of, you have to get another keyboard. And then Apple's thing is coming out the 9th. So next show for us, they'll have had their big confab, I guess, the day before. So we'll have a good bit of news about that, I'm sure, and be able to talk about it then. But before that, other companies have taken their opportunity to announce new stuff. You know, obviously, it's thought that Apple's going to introduce larger iPhone models. So there's IFA 2014 is going on right now. And Samsung unveiled several new mobile and wearable devices, including the Note 4, Note Edge, the Gear S smartwatch, and Gear VR headset. The Note 4 and Note Edge are 2 new models in the Note series of large smartphones, phablets. The Note 4 has got a 5.7-inch Quad Ultra HD Super AMOLED display. Yeah, that's easy to say. 2560 by 1440 pixels at 518 pixels per inch. And it's got there's a couple different processors for it that you can look into more. There's also a 16 megapixel rear camera with image stabilization. It's got a front camera. It has a 3.7 megapixel front camera for selfies, a heart rate sensor, a new S Pen with improved sensitivity that detects pressure, nib tilt, and speed. It's got a plastic textured rear housing with metallic edges. And then an alternative to the Note 4, there's the Note Edge, which is a smartphone that's identical to the Note 4 under the hood but has a curved display. The curved edge of the display operates separately from the main display, providing an app launcher or contextual controls depending on the app that's being used. Then they have their smartwatch. Let's see, 2-inch curved AMOLED display and 3G connectivity. The Tizen-powered device also includes dual-core processor, 4 gigs of storage in a watch, 512 megs of RAM, and sensors like GPS, gyroscope, UV detector, barometer, and heart rate monitor. You know, the kind of stuff that you would have had to, like, carry a wheelbarrow around to haul all the stuff, and now you can have it in your phone and your watch. Let's see, and then not to be left out, Sony announced some new wearable devices and some new smartphone photography accessories. The interesting thing, this is Sony, so of course price points are to be determined. The most relevant to Apple fans or people who've been following Apple is they have a new smart band that embeds a low-power 1.4-inch e-ink display into a fitness tracker. The band also includes a microphone and speaker for phone calls, as well as Bluetooth 4.0 for syncing to a smartphone. In a more full-featured watch segment, they also introduced the new Smartwatch 3, which is the successor to, say it with me, the Smartwatch 2, and is the first Android Wear smartwatch from Sony. This syncs notifications from a compatible Android device and offers 4 gigs of on-the-go music storage. This enters a growing Android Wear marketplace competing with similar smartwatches from Motorola and LG. And then here's an interesting one. Sony added to its lens-style camera line with some new interchangeable lenses The deal is they combine an image sensor with a compact lens that fits onto an iOS or Android smartphone and communicates with the phone via Wi-Fi. So it's an add-on lens. So you can put if you wanted a big honking lens on your camera that added more features, so you could be like a 35 millimeter or a big SLR. Now you can do that with your phone. And so they have things like a 30x optical zoom lens with steady shot image stabilization. So you could get, you know, if you don't do a lot of photography, but you want to have some lenses that add some good features, it may be a lot cheaper to do that than to buy some SLRs. And then finally, on the more cutting edge things, these are products that are announced, but may take a little time before you see them in products. Chipmaker Broadcom today announced a new 5G 802.11ac Wi-Fi chip that's designed for smartphones. Why is that a big deal? Well, what it is it lets you hook up to much faster Wi-Fi and get that with your phone so that it can go up to 650 megabits per second when you're connected to an appropriate Wi-Fi source. It uses MIMO, multiple input, multiple output, bringing up to twice the Wi-Fi performance with 25% more power efficiency than the old 1x1 MIMO. This is 2x2 MIMO. What it does is it means your battery will last longer and you can get faster bandwidth downstream using it. It isn't known if the iPhone 6 is going to use this specific chip, but Broadcom is one of Apple's partners supplying chips for both its desktop and mobile devices. So it could be that the iPhone 6 will support 802.11ac, and maybe this will be the, you know, where you can get something close to gigabit Wi-Fi out of your soon to be savored iPhone phablet if it comes out. And finally, if 650 megabits per second ain't enough for you, Sonnet Technologies announced the Twin 10G Thunderbolt 2 to dual port copper 10 gigabit Ethernet adapter. Yeah, that's a mouthful. A near plug and play solution for adding 10 gigabit Ethernet network connectivity to any computer with Thunderbolt 2 or Thunderbolt ports. Featuring the 20 gigabit per second Thunderbolt 2 technology, the Twin 10G enables users to connect to high-speed infrastructure and storage systems using the 10 gigabyte standard, offering up to 10 times the performance of gigabit Ethernet. Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that might be good enough for my phone, but you know, for your desktop, only 20 gigabits per second. That's just that would blow your hair back. I think this starts getting to very close to, it seems to me, the speeds that you get internally to your device. Let's see, the using RJ45 connectors, the Twin 10G is able to connect to 10 gigabit infrastructure via Cat6 or Cat6A copper cabling at distances up to 55 or 100 meters respectively, depending, which one you use. The copper cabling gets you longer runs. All through one of its two Thunderbolt 2 ports, the Twin 10G connects to the computer through an included Thunderbolt cable. The second port supports daisy chaining of up to 6 devices. Link aggregation of the device's two 10 gigabit Ethernet ports increases throughput beyond what a single connection can sustain. It has transparent failover between 10 gigabit Ethernet ports that keeps the computer connected in case a single cable is disconnected or one of the ports fails. It has wake on LAN, of course. And it is configured through the OS X network control panel or Windows Device Manager. What does it cost to get you that 20 gigabyte goodness? About $600. So save up your pennies. Of course, if you've already put in a network that can support 10 gigabit Ethernet, then you may have the $600 sitting around. And I'm Peter Hughes, and that is the Technology Bytes Info Shot News.
All right.
So should we all just kick in and we could hook those up in the studio so that we can get 10 gigabits in the studio and then
out? Yeah, the bottleneck still exists. We just have a faster path to the bottleneck.
Faster path to failure.
Flickr could get on board with that, I think. Blazing a trail towards failure. All right.
And then harkening back to the celebrity photo hack thing, I haven't seen anybody who suggested using the Technology Bytes approach to not having it happen, which is being completely non-photogenic for people wanting to see any kind of pictures of
us. I've been putting my pics out there for years and no one's picked any of them up.
That you know about.
A little disappointing.
There's a support group. They meet on Wednesday nights.
The best suggestion comment I saw about the celebrity thing was that, if you want nude photos of celebrities, you should start by sending them nude photos of yourself, and then they'll reciprocate. That's that way it's much more...
I agree
and
with
their hashtag was soon to be arrested.
I agree with your third point, though. I mean, people can get upset about this, and celebrities can get upset about it. But these guys or these girls or whoever was actually getting in, the iCloud stuff weren't doing anything that the government's not already doing. I mean, if you upload a picture, other people have access to it at this point. The people could look at it if they wanted to. So it's just, I guess, the wrong people are looking at it.
Well, on Snowden, they talked about that at the NSA, they traded around nude pics they found of just regular people. They collected them and traded them around, showed them around to each other when they were, I guess, dragnetting for other stuff.
Well, so you've got a bunch of youngish males, I'm sure mostly male, that, have spent most of their life studying math and maths and computer science and not a lot of social interaction. And then you put them out there and release them to the wild and nothing like that's going to happen, I'm pretty sure.
What's amazing is that from that article that I found is the culture, though. I mean, more than a culture. I think it's an ecosystem that does this, that it's that routine. And the sad part is, I mean, it's not like they're using super high tech, cutting edge stuff. It's the same old things that have been used forever, since accounts were online where somebody could try to compromise them.
If you don't want it out there, don't put it online or in the cloud.
Well,
that's not blaming the victims. I think that's a wise thing. If you ever feel like you should think about it before you post
This is not blaming the victims. I'm just saying I wouldn't trust. I wouldn't put anything that I wouldn't want anyone ever to see online at this point.
Which means don't put it on your phone. Don't put it on any internet connected device.
Mm-hmm. Also, don't put it on your computer and then take your computer to a repair shop.
Yeah, Best Buy. Oops, or Best Buy. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, it taps into another topic. I've been following along. There's a couple of lawyers that I follow on Twitter that have been kind of crusading against what's known as revenge porn, which is where, you know, you might have pictures of yourself taken by someone you care about
in a relationship at the time.
In a relationship at the time, but then
your girlfriend or boyfriend.
Then you break up and it's messy, and they decide that they're going to punish you by supplying photos they have of you to these sites to shame you and blame you for being, you know, such a, you know, heartless.
Second, that's a horrible thing to do. But unless you're going to marry the person, chances are you're going to break up. So don't
even if you
put
marry
yourself
him.
In that situation. Yeah.
Well, I think another thing that's worth noting is that people in general are using technology that they don't fully understand. There's incorrectly so, but there's an assumption that
it's secure.
Yeah. You know, that whatever I have on my phone is on my phone and it's not going anywhere. If it goes into the cloud, maybe it's in the internet, but it's only accessible to me. There's an assumption that the companies that are making this stuff are making it secure, which is just an inaccurate assumption, which was proved by, we're watching what Barrett's doing here with his little wireless sniffer he's got going on. I was thinking back, you know, when all Wi-Fi access points were unprotected.
Yeah, back like, in the good old days.
In the good old days, if you wanted to get some free Wi-Fi, you could find an access point. And if it was encrypted, it had a default password. But usually it was all unencrypted. Now you look, if you do any kind of war driving or you just like look at your Wi-Fi access points that are available anywhere you are.
Every single thing within the reach of the station is locked down.
It's locked.
With the exception of like someone's Xfinity Wi-Fi, which, you know, Comcast opened up probably without the person's knowledge. But
you still need a username and password to connect to it.
Yep.
So
I wonder if people driving around looking for unsecured Wi-Fi access points hadn't been called war driving, maybe people wouldn't have caught on as quickly. You know,
I was
war driving along and found all these networks, and then they go, well, that's wrong, Marge, we got to fix that.
It just takes a rumor for people to talk about what could happen if your internet connection is used.
Yeah, and the issue too is that people started to place like these wireless access points inside their home network. So, you know, you connect their access point, and instead of just, you know, being able to get some free Wi-Fi, suddenly you can see their home network, you can, you know, listen to music, you can do everything else.
Remember the early days of cable modems when everybody was basically on the same network segment?
Yeah, you could. I remember we go and just see like, hey, who else is on the network? You know, see who's
got
Windows file sharing. Yeah, who's got file sharing turned on? I never had a cable modem. I always had DSL, so I'd have to do that at friends' houses. But it was always kind of interesting. That's also one of the main reasons I never got cable modem, because I didn't want to be on a shared network like that. Although technically everything's a shared network, really.
It's all a shared network. And, you know, I mean, we're all freaking out about different things, but I know that they just, there was a news story about Home Depot getting their network hacked and all the credit cards getting, all their credit card information, customers' credit card information getting stolen and put up on the black market, on the dark net. So even if, you know, once you hand your data all over to someone, you may be doing it securely. But if they haven't secured their own network, then that stuff is vulnerable. So,
well, and hopefully, you know, we have some listeners who are in pretty serious roles at the various places they're at. Don't be the person who goes, oh, no, we don't have to solve that right now. They'll never figure out that we're using, you know, Wi-Fi to connect the cash registers to the credit card processor, which has happened. If you can imagine it, actually, you should probably be thinking farther than that. If you can imagine that, then there's somebody who's got 10 steps farther than that imagined and how to crack it. And so don't rely on this kind of security through obscurity stuff and through passive measures like just don't tell anybody to try and protect your network, especially if you're talking about money or things that you don't want, you know, taken or shared.
Be careful out there. It's a dangerous internet.
Well, or you can just be boring enough that nobody wants your stuff like some of us.
Obscurity through climbing boringness. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, we're opening up the phone lines to your calls. If you want to talk about security or technology or your hard drive that crashed or whatever, you're welcome to give us a call at 713-526-KPFT, where the lovely and talented Groovehouse, who is fully clothed, will take your information. What? You are fully clothed. Are you going to argue that? You gave me the look like I'm not wearing pants.
I only see a shirt.
I'm always fully clothed here at the station.
Although if you go to Pound Tech Bytes, I see somebody's offering access to some files. Never mind. Putting the groove in the house.
Well, you know, I think really if you're going to blame anything, it's high resolution graphics. You know, back when you had to convert all photos to ASCII graphics.
Yeah, you had to UU encode them and then upload them to the binaries.
The speed of bandwidth these days. Yeah, the fact that you don't have to wait 2 days to download one picture. Although Comcast is trying to turn that around. So they're trying to send us back to slow download speeds.
Really? Why do you say that?
At least on my end. I've had extremely bad Comcast luck lately.
Once I finally got Comcast to make their stuff work, it's been really good.
I bought a new wireless router. I bought a new everything, and my speed is still the same.
I had to get them to come to my house and run tests on all the lines, and they finally fixed it. But it took a while. There was a long, painful period of spottiness on my home network. And
I may have to call them and say I know you.
Maybe. Once they got it working, though, it's been great. So I'm streaming media.
Or isn't Dwight one that they had, you know, like flagged him as somebody to be extra, to get extra treatment or whatever, and they were watching his stuff? So maybe if you had a little Twitter conversation with Dwight, it might catch their attention. And
well, I think the way that Comcast does it is they just make it so excruciatingly painful to deal with them that you give up, that you go, well, my horrible internet connection is not as bad as dealing with this first level tech support moron.
Yes, and they actually, someone leaked some Comcast training scripts on, you know, how they're supposed to ask customers this and how they're not supposed to let them out and all the different retorts on why they might want to cancel the service. So it's, you know, it's intrinsic at this point. It's designed to give you a hard time to get anything.
Comcast said, outsourced to India. Ha! We're importing our customer service from Moscow. Bureaucracy at its ultimate refinement.
We are slaves to the internet. We have to have it. If there's only two companies that provide it, we're going to just deal with it. It's unfortunate, and I don't know what the answer to it is.
The answer is municipal fiber.
But that's what all the large companies are fighting
to
right now.
Prevent that.
Well, you know, you got people that are chairmen, you know, members of the boards and executives and all the companies that are on the committees that are researching all of this. All right, 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air, we have a call in the queue, but we have plenty of open lines if you want to participate. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse, fully clothed Groovehouse.
Yes,
always
with
very
pants.
Clothed, with pants. Who do we have?
Groovehouse with pants says that up next on the show, up first on the show, we're going to kick it off with Tony.
Tony, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello. So, quick security question. I've got a new laptop, and I'm setting things up. And so, on a router setup, I'm going to get a new router. And I was wondering, is it possible on most routers to specifically configure outbound and inbound IP addresses you want blocked? So, like, I don't want utilities on the laptop phoning home and things like that.
So, you talk about blocking to, like, specific IP addresses. Do you have a list of IP addresses you don't want it to reach?
Yes.
Yeah, you can do that. Most of them are going to have like a whitelisting or blacklisting function.
You can go to parental controls usually on most of the routers that would allow you to put in specific URLs or IP addresses that you didn't want it to reach.
Okay. So that answers that question. The other question I had real quick is, so on a Windows machine, you can set up you boot up and it's normally an administrator account, and then you can set up other accounts. Is it much more of a security protection to run as a non-administrator, just set up a separate account where you do most of your browsing and things? Administrator account, you set up everything, and then you day-to-day use.
Right, yeah.
That's how you want to do it.
That's a great method. It's a lot of people don't like that. I mean, people can't even be bothered. You know, one of the biggest questions I get asked through the newspaper column is, how do I bypass the login password? People don't want to have to type in a password, so anything that, you know, involves, once you create multiple accounts on a computer, then you're prompted to log in because you have to pick an account and log into it. And people don't like that. But yes, it's a great security method and it's highly recommended. It's not, you know, all the stuff that makes using a computer and using the internet more secure makes it less convenient. And I think that's where people struggle. Mm-hmm. But if you create an account, and you can actually set Windows up to log into, if you don't want to have to log into the computer, you can set up that guest account as a default login and have the computer log into that account automatically. But yeah, setting up just a generic user account that you use to check email and browse the web helps prevent things from getting installed on your computer. Because if you're running as an administrator, you basically have, you know, whatever's using your computer, you or the spyware you've installed has full control.
Yep.
User access controls in Windows 7 and Windows 8 have mitigated that to some extent. But still
the best practice to log in as a non-admin user, non-root user on Linux systems.
Yep.
Okay.
Very solid plan.
All right. Well, that answers my question. Sure appreciate the help.
All right. Well, good luck. Thanks for your call.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Yeah, absolutely. If, you know, when I was getting my iPhone repaired at the Apple store and I didn't have access to my stuff, you know, my phone was away and I'm in the Apple store and I'm trying to use one of their computers, and just that whole idea, I need to download this app so I can log in. I wanted to download and install Citrix on one of their things so I could get to my work email. And of course it prompts you for a password to install the software. It's like, well, crap. But you know, that's very secure. You know, I like the way that Apple does it. It's very hard to install software because without the password.
Reed, did you not try I'm a Genius?
I did try Apple Store, but that didn't
actually
work.
Took my iPhone to the Apple Store yesterday.
Yeah.
Yep.
What for?
To
show off how old the phone is? This is what a new working iPhone looks like. You took it there to admonish it.
Actually, no, the last time I saved, I still have my 3GS.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got this one, the final time I backed up that one, I wiped it and I changed its name. So now on my computer at home, the backup of my old iPhone is called Ye Old iPhone.
Ye Old iPhone. You got to take it to see the grandkids. Let's go to the gallery and see the new stuff.
No, this one, basically, the battery was no longer lasting through the day. It would usually die. It'd get to around 24%.
And then it would shut off.
It just shut off. And it usually happened around 2 or 3 p.m. in the afternoon. Mm. So
3 p.m. in the afternoon as opposed to 3 p.m. in the morning?
Yes. Or 3 p.m. in China.
So did you get a new battery?
So yeah, they replaced the battery. And they did it in the store. It took about 15-20 minutes.
70
it was
bucks?
80 bucks plus tax. It's like 85, something like that. You can do a full replacement. I think it was 200 or something.
To completely replace the phone?
Get it completely new. It's probably a refurbished
phone. Yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway, my phone was working okay, so I just did the battery replacement, which today,
is that a 4?
Today it's definitely helped. It's a 4S.
4S. Yeah, for those of you that own, I may have talked about this last week, I'm sure I did, but for those of you that own iPhone 5s, if you're noticing your battery's not holding a charge, Apple is replacing those for free. If you you can go to the store and they'll check to see if you qualify, or you can check the website online and verify, put in your serial number and see if they are, you know, replacing your battery. But they replaced my battery, and now my phone, you know, holds a charge all day long. It's great again, so I'm happy. Battery, a new battery on a laptop or a phone can make it much more enjoyable to use.
Yeah, it's definitely, because I put up with it for probably at least 8 months.
Yeah.
Where I would have to plug it in at work during the day, or it would die. And sometimes even if I plugged it in at work, before the day was over, I went to bed, it would have died, which was frustrating, but I kept putting it off, so finally I did it. But this one's, you know, it's a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
But I was originally planning to get a 5S, but when the 5S's came out, I was like, you know what, that just does not add enough functionality for me to justify spending $750 on it, because I buy them outright instead of under any kind of contract, phone contract, and it was too much money for it. So I'm gonna wait and see what Apple comes out with for the 6s, and if I'm still not satisfied with it, then I may buy like a Nexus 5 or something.
Hmm. Are you looking at the big screen or the smaller screen 6?
Probably smaller. I don't really want to carry around a
flip flop.
I mean, I may be fat with a pH, phablet? But I don't want
you don't
want to
be fabletous.
I don't want
that's the new fabulous.
I
want a phablet.
The iFlab.
A flablet.
Flablet. Oh, he's kind of just made out of putty, and it's a rubber phone. All right. I see we have a call in the queue. So 713-526-573. And if you want to be on the air, we're going to take this next call, but we have time and lines. Well, we'll have time in the second hour for your call probably. So let's talk to the next call. Groovehouse, who is it?
Up next, we're going to speak with Mike.
Mike, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hi, thanks a lot for your show.
No problem.
I have a couple of problems that all occurred roughly the same time frame, I think. Started kind of a cascade effect. But right now, I'm sitting here with a desktop computer that will not respond to my on-off button. But when I go back, unplug it from the wall, and plug it back in, the lights will come on in the front, like it's trying to start up, and then they go dead again. And I can't get any more response.
So you can't get it to turn on at all? So you're, well, who's the manufacturer? Is it a desktop or a laptop, first of all?
It's a desktop. And it actually, it's running Ubuntu Linux.
Okay, so...
Is it a Dell or is it a... Who'd you
no,
say
I bought it locally here at the Micro Center. It was a
Micron or
E-Machine?
E-Machine?
Maybe?
Pardon?
Is it an E-Machine?
No.
Is it a white box that like is put together from parts, like it's not a brand name?
Well, I don't know how they built it. They built it in-house, but
right.
They were selling them, as a mass-produced unit, so...
I know they did. I know they had the E-Machine. It's just more of a curiosity, not necessarily important. How old is it?
Yeah, it's several years old, probably 3 years old.
It could be something simple like the power supply.
Does the power supply fan come on when you do that? Anything?
No.
If you go around to the back, usually a little bit of the power supply is exposed. Does it light up and it, like liquid acid, doesn't spin the fan just even for a half second and power right back down?
I haven't looked at the back. I've been looking at the front, and the lights come on, but I don't know if the fan comes on or not.
Well, it's getting power, but it's not firing.
It's shutting
up.
Down immediately.
Yeah.
Does the screen or anything flicker at all, or does it even get that
no,
far? It
no.
doesn't get so far as even
That's
getting
the
video
question.
Card. Okay.
You're most likely looking at a faulty power supply.
Okay.
And they're not terribly expensive to replace.
Okay.
And you could probably go to Micro Center and get a replacement one for under $50, maybe even under $30.
Be careful with
bucks.
The packaging, and if that's not it, you can return it too.
That's true.
Okay. I should probably take this one out and take it in to the Micro Center.
Yeah, and get a replacement, and then just make sure that check the return policy. If it doesn't solve the problem, you can return it. But that'd be the first thing I would try.
Okay. So this happened, right? You got time for a second?
We're running out of time, but we can put you on hold and bring you back in the second half.
That'd be great.
All right. We'll put you on hold, and we'll do our station business and come back to you. Do you have a Barrett time tonight?
Yeah, just announcement-wise.
Okay, perfect.
I've not read through it after putting it together, so we'll see how it goes. But, perfect show.
Perfect show. All right. Well, we'll get back to Mike after this short break, but we are going to take a short break and take care of some station business. So... I want to remind you that you're listening to Technology Bites, your favorite computer call-in show on Wednesday nights between 8 and 10 p.m. or some other time later on.
On 90.1 FM.
We'll be right back after these messages.
El patrocinio de Radio Escuchas es una respuesta práctica al problema de obtener y mantener mejores programas de radio. Un enfoque a anunciantes o a las audiencias masivas considera mediocridad de la radio comercial. Con esta mediocridad, el mejoramiento de la radio es una utopía. Cuando los radioescuchas apoyan la radio que ellos disfrutan, sus opciones son mejores. El patrocinio de radioescuchas les permite tomar el control de su radio, de las manos de compañías y las pone en manos de la comunidad. Pero mantener este tipo de radio requiere de usted. Su donación es nuestro apoyo para mantener KPFT en el aire como un recurso vital de la comunidad. así que visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para convertirse en un miembro el día de hoy. Su donación es esencial para mantener viable el patrocinio de Radio Escuchas para las generaciones por venir. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around. I just keep on walking, keep on talking, marching on the freedom line.
50 years after the March on Washington, the struggle for civil rights continues. On Saturday, September 20th at TSU, the Civil Rights Coalition Conference will help us learn how to strategize, organize, and protect our rights and be effective and dynamic activists. The one-day conference will cover topics such as community organizing, political and media strategies, immigration, criminal justice reform, coping with discrimination, and voter suppression. The keynote speaker will be Jim Harrington, director of the Texas Civil Rights Project. Other speakers are from ACLU, CARE, HPJC, LULAC, and End Mass Incarceration Houston. For more details on the conference, including the program, speakers, coalition members, and registration, go to HoustonCRC.com. This is KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston.
Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you...
Yeah. That means it's time for... Yeah. Anyway. Take it away, Barrett.
All right. Perfect show. So there's not much going on this week, but that's okay, because you can get your geeky fix in all in one place, the September installment of the Technology Bites Geek Gathering. This is our post-DEF CON gathering, so some of the hosts and friends of the show will be bringing out new toys to show off, like some software-defined radio kit. We'll be listening in on 90.1 FM right here and letting attendees seek out other interesting signals as we're picking up ACARS traffic to plot the planes and their trajectories onto a map of the Houston airspace. So while there might be a blind spot on the other side of downtown, we should have a clear shot of IAH and Houston Hobby, as well as a nice slice of overhead sky to listen for long-haul flights who factor Houston into their flight path just in case they themselves have a problem. I will also bring up a local service that will let us stream ACARS data via TCP/IP for anyone with a laptop who wants to listen in and plot planes on their own. A number of people all over the world are currently doing this, meaning you don't have to have a clear view of the sky over the Netherlands to see what's going on at Schiphol Airport. So all of this happens around 1090 megahertz. We'll also be running some 2.4 gigahertz wireless gear that should scare you into disabling auto-join on your mobile devices. And while we could do that from a laptop, we're instead choosing to arm a small number of even smaller computers running Linux. The BeagleBone Black, Rev-C, and the new Raspberry Pi B Plus are among them. The Ubertooth 1 and the new Pineapple Mark 5, equipped with the new hardware development kit, will also be making appearances, as will the DEF CON badge with original CON firmware. There'll be a tool chain set up so you can try out your hand at hacking the badge, or you can start from scratch to try to unlock its secrets. And to top it all off, I'll be lugging in 8 terabytes of data carried hand-carried straight from Las Vegas to you that I'll be making available over Windows file sharing to a couple dozen gigabit Ethernet ports for all who'd like to leech. We're talking about video presentations from most of DEF CON and Black Hat, I guess most of the DEF CONs and Black Hats, as well as over a dozen other conferences, along with many things that will make your next antivirus scan a lot of fun. DEF CON ran a number of hard drive duping stations throughout the con to distribute the goods from their media servers, and these are them. Obviously, you won't be able to get it all in the limited time allotted. Even with 2 disk duplicators, we wouldn't stand much of a chance of wrapping before sunrise. So you'll have to pick and choose what you want. I'd suggest looking through the recent video titles to find something that interests you, or taking advantage of grabbing a new operating system image that you wouldn't otherwise want to download from a home connection. They've got all of OpenBSD 5.5, which is about 25 gigs alone. So if you want to take advantage, bring something with some extra storage capacity and an Ethernet connection. I'm sure we'll have an open spot or two for a thumb drive, but wired is the way to go if you can swing it. The Geek Gathering Hope happens at Cohen's Coffee, Art, Darts, Dwight, and Wi-Fi at 2808 Milam at Drew in Midtown Houston. There's plenty of parking and absolutely no reason for you not to join us this Friday, September 5th. Things get started a little after 7 and won't wind down until Flicted gets a hankering for pie. That's it for the call for all geeks on the ground together, and that's that for Barrett time.
All right, so let's go back to the phones, and we'll rejoin our conversation with Mike here on Technology Bites. He had another question for us. So, yes. Hey, go ahead.
My problem started when I upgraded from Ubuntu, I think, 12-something to 14.3 or something. And initially, I had to install the new operating system twice. Now, it was just downloaded over the Internet and took place. But when I finished installing, my screen had incorrect resolution. My mouse wasn't responsive. My printer didn't work, and I don't think the keyboard. The keyboard may have worked. The arrows worked. But I don't know what the problem was there, and I can't fix it now because I can't start my machine. So
yeah, those two are unrelated. Like, there's no way the Ubuntu installation is letting, you know, not letting the hard drive. But the best way to install Ubuntu, for the most part, is instead of going through the installation scripts when you boot up straight from, you know, the DVD, or if you're booting up from a CD or an image on thumb drive, is to boot into the virtual machine and then make sure that everything's working, which it should do because it does a pretty good job of auto-detecting, you know, all the hardware you have, all the peripherals, and then install from there. And then what you're doing is you're kind of installing, as far as the driver detection, you're installing networking config, networking, you know, xconf, all where you need it, and generally it'll be a mirror of what your bootable CD environment was like. So hopefully if things worked on the bootable CD, they'll work on that next boot from the hard drive.
Okay, well...
Or did you go about it doing it that way, or how did you actually install it?
My installation of the new Ubuntu was strictly over the Internet. I got a message that says 14.2 is available. Do you want to install it?
No. Oh, so it broke everything on the upgrade.
Yeah.
Okay. Did it do it via the GUI, or were you using, like, apt-get to go in and do the upgrade?
No, it was a GUI, I guess. Okay. I didn't have to do anything except say yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the first thing is to get your machine.
It's the GUI apt-get manager. Basically, pops up a window that says, hey, 14.02's out. Do you want to install it? Do you want to do the upgrade? Because I haven't checked yes to do that yet.
So here's what one of the things you can do. So if you can actually get it up and booted, and I'm assuming that, you know, like when your screen pops up, you can't really see what's going on because it's the wrong video driver. So you said your keyboard won't work?
Well, the arrows seem to work. The mouse was frozen, but the arrows could kind of go through my icons on the desk.
Do you know about, like, hitting Control-Alt and then one of the F keys once your Linux system is booted?
I don't know which particular. I tried about every combination.
No, so what it'll do is, so when what you're doing is you're actually running, like, a window manager, and that's on, like, a virtual terminal that usually hangs out on, if you were, like, to hit Control-Alt, and I think it's on a Windows machine. I don't have one in front of me. Or a Windows keyboard layout. I think it's Control-Alt and F7.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty. I'm pretty sure Flicked its hold up numbers. I'm pretty sure it's 7 on Ubuntu. So the deal is, if you hold down Control Alt and then, like, hit any key from, like, F1 all the way up to F6, that will bring up another terminal, and it'll just be like a little login prompt. So, and what you can do is you can actually go in, and if things aren't working, like if you can't get your resolution going on your X window session, what you can do is you can actually go in and you can do, like, apt-get. And, for instance, I would try, like, an update. So do apt-get update, and that updates all the sources. And then you can do an apt-get upgrade. That'll upgrade everything else that's, you know, kind of out of kilter. Mm-hmm. And if you need to, I don't know the exact same thing, but you can do, like, a dpackage reconfigure and say dpackage reconfigure X11 or dpackage reconfigure whatever your Windows manager is, and it should sort out all the resolution issues. But the first thing I would do is I would get from the command line, the GUI's okay, but I don't completely trust the GUI. Mm-hmm. And I know that if it's throwing errors, like, hey, this link is broken, or hey, we couldn't retrieve this, or hey, this GB, we couldn't get this GPG key, so we couldn't verify these, it'll hide a lot of that stuff from you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you run, you know, apt-get space update and then upgrade, a lot of times you'll see exactly what's breaking down. And then you can, you know, Google that error message, you can kind of chase it from there.
Okay, well, that'll give me something to think about.
Yeah, but it sounds like just your Windows Manager just has some funk. Hopefully it's just as easy as the Windows Manager has some funky settings for your mouse and for your keyboard and for your resolution, and it's as easy as just reconfiguring your Windows your window manager. So,
okay, well, one last question. I have an HP Office Jet 4635, and I tried to connect that to my laptop, which is running Windows XP. And it went out to look for a driver for it, but it says it can't find anything.
Now, when you're connecting it, Jay, you might be able to answer this. Does Windows XP, will it still go out? Are they still, like, offering up driver support for XP, or do they shut that off?
No, I mean, for what? For
XP. Like, so he's got an XP, and are you hooking it up? Is it a network printer, or are you physically connecting it?
No, just my private own single.
So, what? I mean,
or have you looked, like...
Yeah, wouldn't that, the automated system, wouldn't that go out to a Microsoft server
it is,
somewhere?
Are they still propping that up?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
That's
are
what
they
I'm
still
saying,
running
they
it?
Cut it off. Yeah.
They retired XP, right?
Yeah, they did. They end-of-lifed it, hard end-of-lifed it. So I'm wondering if they just don't have a placeholder where it's going out to look for updates where it'll never bring home an update, you know, which is kind of sad. That could be happening.
That's a possibility. I can't go out there by hand.
Yeah, you can. So what you need to do is just go get the model number for yours. Go say Google for that. Chances are
HP?
They'll still list an XP. Yeah, they'll still list an XP driver. You can also do just straight up HP DirectJet generic drivers or generic IPP drivers.
A lot
drivers.
Of times you can use the, what is it, PL5 or generic driver. But if you go to the HP website and search for your model, they should have a troubleshooting page for it and a FAQ page and a drivers page, and you should be able to go and download the XP drivers for that printer, assuming that they ever made them.
I bet they. How new is the printer?
Well, the printer is fairly new. It's we bought it, 3-4 months ago.
Well, you know, one of the things that can happen with printer, I haven't had to think about this in a long time, but there's emulation mode. What's the model of the printer again? You just spouted it off. So.
Yeah, I had it here. 4635. It's a fax system, too.
Let's see. So software driver downloads, if you go to HP, would be the ones that would supply that. Mm-hmm. And HP has, let's see, they have Mac OS X, Linux, Microsoft Windows, Vista 8, and 7. They don't seem to have XP drivers for that. Oh, yeah, they do. They totally do.
Yeah, Windows XP.
Yeah, Windows XP drivers available for download. If you just Google search, I just did a quick Google search, HP space 4635 space XP. Took me to the HP site, and they have a drop-down list, and you have to scroll up. It's not very intuitive, but scroll up, and they have Windows XP. Let's see what they say. So
I'll do that. That's great.
Yeah. So they're out there. I mean, a lot of times with hardware like that, it's really up to the hardware vendor to supply the drivers. But if you run into a situation where you can't find a driver for a particular new printer, a lot of times they'll operate in an emulation mode of an older printer, which the operating system might have native drivers for. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of printers like Brother and Lexmark might emulate HP printers. HP usually has a lot of built-in support, and if it isn't a new HP printer, it might emulate an older HP printer, so you can install drivers to do that.
Okay, very good.
All right?
Thanks so much.
All right, well, thanks for your call tonight. Have a good evening.
Thanks, same to you. Bye-bye.
All right, so Groovehouse is giving... What are you doing with
Flick? He's either shooting him or playing rock, paper, scissors. I couldn't quite figure it out.
Rock, paper, shotgun.
Just talking about guns.
Guns. Groovehouse is kind of slowly... He's going the way of guns that... He's in the entry phase of where Barrett went motorcycles. I'm worried that Groovehouse
right now
is going to...
Well, right now he's an Epper, but he's Epper? Working on the P and the R.
No, I'm not.
What's the P and the R?
Prepper.
Oh.
He's just joking.
That's it won't happen until Groovehouse perfects the freeze-dried breakfast taco. Just add water breakfast.
All right, now we can move.
Now I can go occupy my bunker.
Now I can prep. Now I'm ready to prep.
713-526-5738 if you want to give us a call. All of our lines are open. We'll be happy to talk to you about printer drivers or failed Ubuntu upgrades or whatever you got. That's what we're here for.
Prepping. I've got a hard time preparing breakfast, much less prepping for the zombie apocalypse. So kudos, Groove.
One of the things I was going to tell you when I went to the Apple store, one of the things I noticed that they did was they ran the Diags.
Yes. But you have to have a ticket number.
But that's the thing. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's you can't just type that
you
into your
can't.
Phone. It's because it's Diags :// But there's a number that they put on their device that's tied to your device that sends the information back to their the iPad that they're using.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't think you can just type it in and see.
I have not been able to find a way to run that myself. But I had them run it after they replaced my battery. I had them run it again to show me. And they said that the battery life is reporting healthy, but it gives some good information. The guy told me, I said, he said, somebody gave a code away to somebody that got fired.
Yeah. Are there keyloggers? Are there intentional keyloggers that you can go and download for iPads or for phones or anything where you can actually capture?
The thing is, I think it creates a random. I think it was five.
So it's just good for that session, or it's just good for a little while.
They have to open a ticket, and then it has a session ID, and then you type that in, and it talks to something, and that happens.
Yeah.
But the Diag doesn't show up on the phone; it shows up on the iPad.
Yeah.
Which is.
So it opens up some kind of diagnostic port that you could probably.
Yeah, but it'd be cool if
it's not directly connected. It's doing it over Wi-Fi.
It's not doing it over the Wi-Fi necessarily.
It's doing it over the internet, over the cloud.
So did anybody pay attention to Dwight had...
Who?
Pictures of cats? I saw those.
God, that is so sad. Those are going to be the most well-documented cats. No, he had upgraded his computers at home, and on his iPhone, he had suddenly found in his camera roll or in his photo stream, there were 50 flag icons, national flag icons, and he couldn't figure out how they got there or how they got onto his phone, into his photo stream, but...
Different countries?
International cats?
I discovered they're old iChat icons. And
his phone probably scanned all the directories looking for images and
iPhoto or something on his Mac Mini, which had a legacy home folder of some kind, an older home folder or something, scooped those up and put them on his phone. But it was a mystery for him, and he crowdsourced it to Twitter, and I figured out they were the flag icons. Maybe somebody else did at the same time, too, but it was like...
My phone went all these places without me.
And once I saw that there were iChat icons, I knew Dwight's a big iChatter. Now he's an iCatter. They're iCat icons. All right, so Groovehouse is screening a call for us as we speak. The phone number, if you want to be on the air, is 713-526-5738. So I had an interesting weekend. This was new to me. Unfortunately, in my house, certain things... If you've lived somewhere for a while, kind of fall into a certain amount of disrepair or neglect, and my home office was one of them.
The hoarders people came out. The intervention we all called in about happened.
Well, kind of, except I intervened on myself. So
Jay, I'm having a problem with you, Jay.
I was getting real lazy, and I turned my office into a place to just throw things. Just whatever couldn't be shown in public or wasn't allowed to have in the house, went into the office.
Extra huge junk drawer.
Yeah, kinda. It was just a huge, it really was. And laundry wasn't put away. It was all folded up, put on a table, and then it wasn't folded. After a while, it was just piled. So
baby alligators.
It's my bachelor room. That sounds like my place.
Yeah, well, it's definitely a throwback to my bachelor days, which are so far in the past now anyway. But I went in, I took the long weekend, and I tackled it. And I just got in there. And I started throwing stuff away, and I started folding stuff and putting it away, and it's mostly done. And now it's like I'm really excited to go home because I have my office. So I've got my computer desk is all clean. I don't know how long it's going to last, but it's kind of nice to go in there now because I have this workspace with this nice 27-inch iMac and a desk that I can actually get to.
So is that where you were doing all your photo editing before? You were just doing it amid the clutter, or did you set up shop elsewhere in the house?
Well, that was the problem. See, I would... occasionally do photo editing in there, but I got to the point where it was just so unpleasant to be in there that I was doing it on my laptop. And so it was fine and I was able to do it, but my good workspace was just not a good workspace. And I just want to say that if you have a room like that, go deal with it, because it wasn't pleasant. All the dust kicked up and realized how filthy the carpet was and stuff, but it's so nice to go in there now.
Took it from cave to man cave?
I took it from sewer grate to man cave. there was no organic stuff. There was no
food. No sludge shoveling. No,
that was not half empty food containers or bottles or any of
fast
that nonsense.
Fast food wrappers and
No, trash. Because I hadn't even got to the point where I could go in there and, like, eat comfortably. I was thinking,
mummified animals?
No.
2 inches of Cheeto dust accumulated over
No, but now I can get... I've got two great cabinets in there. I've got one where I've got my camera gear, and I've got one where I've got all my collectible G.I. Joe stuff. And now I can actually see it and kind of enjoy some of my possessions, and it's just pleasant to be in there now. So...
Are you displaying your collections in there? Do you have, like, cool cabinets yet?
I just said I have two cool cabinets.
Oh, sorry.
That are these nice glass cases where they have two glass front doors you open up and shelves in them to keep them dust-free. So I've got one. They're matching, but one of them I use to keep my camera gear in. What do you got?
Pete, I heard a door. Check your six for SWAT team members.
Check your six. Stay on target. Stay on program.
At least fire up your webcam.
See, I'm way ahead because if there was anything like that, the dogs would let me know.
Dogs?
Earlier.
I think SWAT team, they take out the dogs first.
I think this
would
be the first time that your dogs didn't bark. It's like when the men, when the men with automatic weapons enter
hit
your...
the dogs. They just tranquilized them. There's no animal cruelty here.
No. That's what we were telling you. They tranquilized them. Because SWAT comes in with tranquilizer guns. All right. Well, see, Groovehouse has been screening calls so well that they're not even making it
you
to the air.
Screen them away.
What are we? Are people ask? I just want to know. I'm out of curiosity. Just, you know, what are we?
What are you doing to get them off the phone so fast?
What are they calling in about? Are they complaining again?
Shout outs?
No.
I mean, we got to fill the air with something. So, you know, talking about the calls that didn't make it.
I'll just put them on. You know,
No. I'm not saying that.
We're just curious because we're blocked out of this.
Answering
this is
previous
a black
questions
box operation.
And giving tips for
oh, okay.
previous questions.
Any of it any good? No? Yeah. No, apparently not because nothing's written down and Groovehouse didn't bring it up, so leave them alone.
I'll just put them on the air so we can have something to talk about.
Well,
we're not trying to get up in your kitchen and question all your own things. We're bored over here. So we're just
yeah, we're just looking for some entertainment value. Sometimes people call in and they don't want to be on the air, and sometimes they're just that kind of crazy that, you know, it's funny to talk about them, make fun of them a little, or ease some of your burden, because I don't want you to shoulder this by yourself.
But, I mean...
We'll talk about this after the show. I trust that you're doing the right thing. I was just wondering if there was anything you could impart to us for humor or entertainment's sake. If there was, I would have
relayed it without having to... You know, put our
you know you're hassling a guy that's into there. Guns, right?
That's no, true. I should leave him alone.
But got a call coming in. Like Barrett, then they're probably not all assembled or working at the same time.
Yeah, none of them would actually be able to fire off around.
That's a Groovehouse's unkempt man cave. It's just a bunch of gun parts, and not all of them are to the same gun, and no gun is complete.
This one works, but I don't have any bullets for it. And this one...
Yes, and then gunpowder residue everywhere. All right, so if you want to be on the air, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. We invite you to participate in tonight's program. We've got a little over half an hour left in the show, and we'd be happy to talk to you, and we'd love to hear from you. So give
call
us a
and
call.
Talk to Groove, but we hope you'd like to talk to us, too.
Well, now I'm afraid that Groovehouse is going to seek unholy retribution.
He's just
going to
put people on now. He's going to be like, hey, ask Jay about this.
No, I'm not.
It's okay.
I thought that we didn't really do people trying to answer questions for us.
You're right. I know.
And so most of those calls is what that is. So I'd rather not discuss it. That way the people that are listening know that I'm not going to mention their comments on the air.
The easy answer is said, no, there's nothing worth commenting on.
Groovehouse does not negotiate with terrorists.
I mean, until a call is in the queue and flashing green, it's ready for us. If there's nothing, then
I know.
There won't be
I
anything.
Just was taking an interest. You had a little thing going on that didn't quite evolve into what I thought it was going to evolve into. So I just wanted a state of the union.
I stay on this side of the crawl screen.
I was just looking for a little transparency, you know.
Chipping away. There's chipping away.
Yep.
He figured you were bogarting the vein throbbing goodness of.
Yes. Well, I'm not trying to antagonize, honest to goodness. No. I was just curious. Yeah. Excuse me.
Understood.
All right. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next on the show, we've got John with a question.
Who has an answer for everything. Hello, John. You're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, gentlemen. Good evening.
Good evening.
I'm using Chrome. Mm-hmm. And when I try to access, I'll use an example, an Apple.com discussion group, I get a message that says, cannot connect, interference with secure connection. Apple.com uses encrypting SSL to protect Chrome. Try to connect, discussion, Apple returned unusual and incorrect credentials, malformed certificate, semantic class, and then a whole bunch of numbers.
So here's what you're doing is you're hitting a SSL certificate that is somehow invalid, and whether it was, you know, it's expired or it doesn't match up to the domain or what have you, that's what's going on there. So that connection is still going to be encrypted, but it just means that, you know, when your browser goes and says, like, hey, who signed off on this certificate? Is this certificate good? Someone up the chain is saying, no, it doesn't look very good. So that's what's going on. So you can still get to the site, but you're going to have to choose if, you know, how much you want to risk. And I believe you should still be able to get there if you go in and add the security exception and say, don't worry about
security. But the question is, why would an Apple discussion site be throwing data? Yeah.
Well, is it a pure Apple site, or is it like an Apple discussion site?
No, it's Apple.com. You would think that if that was coming up frequently on an Apple.com site, that somebody would say something to someone who could do something about it. That's not so.
It's probably not legit.
Well, so what I'm concerned when you are seeing that, and I don't know this for sure, but based on that there might be something else that your website's trying to connect to. Like, I wonder if you have a spyware issue or if you have some other malware on your system that might be trying to pull in information from other sites that's causing this kerfuffle with your browser. I don't know the answer to that right off the top of my head, but
Chrome on OS 10 though is pretty.
It's Chrome on an Apple.
Yeah.
Can you give an example of
it? It is on an Apple, isn't it? I'm not making assumptions. I shouldn't be.
Are you using an Apple computer?
Oh no, sir. No,
you're using a Windows computer to read Apple forums.
That's your problem, right?
There it is.
Yeah.
Well, hang on a minute. I go to Google and I say, or I'm even on the Apple site, and I say, I go down to the discussion groups, click on that. I'm using, this is an XP.
Now, hold.
How do you get
to Google and then you go to Apple from Google? Or
how are you getting to the discussion groups? Like, give me an example. If I go to Apple.com, for example, I could go to support, and that might take me to some discussion groups.
You would ask me that.
I would.
I don't recall. Okay, I think I was looking something up, bear with me, like how to do something with an iPad Air, and I got the Google results, and I saw, here's an Apple.com discussion group, and usually there's two or three little questions listed underneath, so I click on that, and it says, blah, blah, can I connect?
So are you going to discussions.apple.com, or do you have any recollection of what that URL looked like? Because it also could be, it could have Apple in it, but it could not be a real Apple.
It could be a site that's not well maintained and actually does have problems.
Okay, let me throw this out. I have a little Nook tablet, and I did the same thing with it, and I'm using Chrome on it, and it goes straight to the discussion group.
Okay. What happens if you try doing it with another browser like Firefox or Internet Explorer?
I haven't tried that. My Internet Explorer is so old it doesn't work anymore.
Well, that doesn't make... I mean, you just haven't updated it?
Correct.
Is your Chrome version current?
Correct.
Have you scanned the system for possible spyware?
Yes, sir.
What are you using?
I've got AVG and Malwarebytes.
Okay, well, that's the Malwarebytes I have a little bit of confidence in.
Yeah.
Hold on. I'm actually getting, when I go to discussions.apple.com, I'm getting a yellow caution in my browser's thing. I'm seeing what the deal is with it. That's not it. But one of the things they are doing on that is they're including things that are and are not encrypted on the same page, which causes issues with some browsers, but Chrome, being a new version of Chrome, should be able to handle mixed.
No, I'm using Chrome, and I'm going to discussions.apple.com and clicking on various links.
Are you not getting that right there?
Yeah. I even have a laptop that I tried, and I'm using Chrome there, and it did go to this particular little discussion.
Their certificate looks okay. It just looks like they're mixing SSL and non-SSL stuff on a page, and I'm checking out this cert right now. Yeah, the one, so if you're actually going to discussions.apple.com, it's a valid cert, and it's good until April of 2016. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, I'd be curious to know what the actual URL is that you're hitting then when that comes up. So maybe if you have some time later on this evening or maybe over the week, if you could get me a link that you could, that demonstrates this problem you're having, I'd be happy to go look and see. If,
oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, I want to see too, Jay, if you forward that.
Yeah, time, I wouldn't cool mind see. Seeing it because I'd just be curious to know what site you're hitting and see if I can replicate the issue. But the thing I'd be worried about and what we're not clear on is whether or not you're hitting a valid site or whether you might be hitting a malicious site. There's a lot of support sites, and I use air quotes on the radio for effect, that they try to trick you or they try to bring you into their to their website by posting answers to problems, but really they're not very good sites and they have malicious code in there. So you might be running afoul of something like that. So I'd be curious to know if you're hitting a legitimate Apple site or if you're hitting something else.
Yeah, I'd say pay, and you'll email Jay, but I'd pay super close attention to the URL because, for instance, discussions.apple.com is a different domain than apple.discussions.com. But you look at it, and they both kind of look like Apple domains.
Yeah. Okay,
so I'll people do a little, fool people little that research.
Yeah, and feel free to contact me via geekradio.com, which should throw up no errors.
Okay, and one other little quick question. I'm getting an iPad Air, and I noticed that you had to set up a new email address. And they say that one they recommend, and I've never heard of this one before, is like, let's just say, johnsmith@icloud.com.
That's the new Apple, yeah. Do you not have a like an iMac email address or any other Apple email addresses?
No,
for
I don't
iTunes
have any of that Apple stuff yet.
Well, if you sign up for iTunes, you sign up with your email address, whatever email address that is that you use.
Yeah.
And well, one thing, given the problem, you know, the celebrity, the hacking iCloud thing, I think one thing to take from that is don't use your real email address as your username for iCloud. Because
well, no,
then that's easier for them, for people to test if that address is a real one and if it's the one you're using to log in. So you may want to – it's a free email address. It doesn't really do anything. You may want to just go ahead and sign up for it, and then that keeps your real email address that you like to use stuff for as a fallback to email your, you know, password resets or that kind of stuff too.
Yeah. The main thing is setting up for iCloud and iTunes and all of that. You need to have a login ID and an account. And you like to have that tied to an email address that you can actually receive email to so that you can recover passwords if you forget them and so forth. So for me, for my iTunes, I just use my primary email address and signed up using that because I'm also using the iPhone and the tablet to connect to my email and so forth. And it works fine. I also enabled the security passcode. So you actually have to type in a code to get onto the iPhone or the iPad in the first place. So that information is pretty safe that way.
Yeah, well, I understand. And I called two, 3 weeks ago saying, okay, if I use my email address that's on my desktop and I use it on my, let's say, new iPad, when I turn on my iPad, I will get some email. Now, when I turn on my desktop, I think you said, well, you've already received your email on your iPad.
Now, I might have said it the other way around because your iPad will connect to your email using what's called IMAP, and so it won't delete mail from the server until you actually delete the message. But if you're using your computer to connect to your mail and it downloads the mail and then deletes it from the server, it won't be available to the iPad.
Right, so it'd be best to have a different...
Not necessarily. It might be better if you go into your email client on your computer and tell it not to delete mail from the server right away, but maybe delete mail that's a week old or a month old.
Oh, I see. Then it will stay there. Then when I turn on my new happy-dappy iPad Air, it will pick up those emails also. I'll have it in two places.
Exactly. Right? You'll see all of your mail on all devices.
Oh, hot diggity.
That way you don't have to keep track of two email addresses.
Right.
So, like, I have one email account, and mine's all through Gmail, so I don't delete any mail from the server. So all my mail is available to me on my laptop, on my desktop, on my iPhone, on my iPad, all my mail all the time. I can get to it anytime I need to, and that works good for my purposes.
Could I use my present email address on Gmail? Could I?
Yes. Yes.
Because it's a web-based, correct?
Right. Well, it's web-based, but you can connect to it with a client. But, yeah, you can set up your Gmail on your iPhone or your iPad Air or whatever, and it'll work brilliantly.
Okay. I'll tablet.
Have you already gotten this iPad, or when are you planning to get it?
No, sir, I'm getting it tomorrow. It's being mailed from Staples, of all places.
Okay, because they're coming up on announcing some new ones. So Staples has been offering good deals, so
yeah,
I assume you
got
$100
bucks off on it. So
You'll love it.
I mean, you want hardware, you want hardware. You don't want to wait a handful of months.
Exactly. Well, no, my original question was, I just never heard of iCloud.com.
That's just a free email.
For an email address.
Yeah, well, that used to be Mac.com or Apple.com
or something. Yeah, they went through a lot of different things.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. So nothing new. Okay.
It's a nice way to let you tie, like Jay said, all of your Apple accounts into one thing, to where if you lose your phone, you have to restore your phone. It just restores everything for you because it stores all that stuff in the cloud. So
you wouldn't recommend against it?
I would do it, and I would just keep it separate from everything else, because that's the main thing. Compartmentalize all your data, and that way if someone gets into that, the worst they can do is configure their phone like you had your phone configured, maybe.
Oh, okay.
You know?
All right. Good advice. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Good night.
All right. Good night. Thank you for your call, John.
Okie doke.
All right. 713-526-5738 as we plunge into the final half hour of our show. Groovehouse has another call queued up or teed up and ready to go, but we have plenty of open lines here if you want to participate in tonight's episode of Technology Bites. We certainly invite you to do so. So when is the announcement? It's September 9th, isn't it?
Yes.
So 6 days from now, there's going to be the Apple's like, and one more thing kind of thing going on with Tim Cook.
Well, it probably will have wearables. I don't know if they're going to do the iPad stuff on the 9th or if that comes a little bit later.
We got the new Apple. We got the new iOS, right? iOS 9?
8? 8's coming out, and then 10.10 Yosemite on the desktop is coming out.
And they've already announced 10.10, so it's supposed to be, I guess they'll probably be, I bet you that'll be available for download on the 9th.
They're probably going to put all that together, because the whole thing is about the continuity, the sort of sharing between the desktop OS and the, you know, mobile.
Yeah. Well, I'll be curious. I'll be tuned in. I always dial in on the desktop at work and pay a little attention to that. I have to bring my Apple to work so I can watch the live video, because it doesn't.
Are they block?
It doesn't work on the Windows. It doesn't work in Safari for Windows even. You have to. It only works in Safari.
No, WWDC for you.
All right. So 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. As I said, we have plenty of open lines and plenty of time, but we do have a call in the queue. So Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Daryl.
Daryl, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
I was listening to y'all talk about the guy that was using Chrome and having a certificate problem.
Yes.
And I don't know if it applies to Chrome, because I haven't personally tried it on that one, but I know in Firefox and the Explorer, they have the capability of downloading a copy of the certificate to the local machine. And if something happens and they connect and the certificate on the server, on the web server, is changed, it should automatically update their certificate, but it doesn't always do it, and you will get an action just like this guy is talking about. But I haven't tried that on Chrome.
Okay.
So he needs to check in the security in Chrome and see if maybe he's downloaded it in the past, a certificate, and Chrome is not automatically updating it when he goes to that Windows, that Apple site.
So a cached old cert. We should go.
Given
and
that he's on
that
XP,
cert was
that.
Actually
it's,
issued.
It's similar to having corrupted cache is what it's like, but you actually have a copy of their certificate.
It's the easiest way to clear out old certs and download new ones.
Yeah.
Is there an easy way to do that in Chrome?
I don't use. I quit using Chrome. I found out through a personal experience on this deal that I was running Firefox, and every time I would open a tab, and Chrome was trying to attach to my Firefox and monitoring what I was doing, and I got ticked off about that, and took Chrome off, and my machine runs faster. I may try Chromecast, and if I do, I'm going to have to put Chrome back on there. But for right now, I got rid of it because it was trying to monitor everything I did everywhere.
So they upgraded their cert April of this year. So you'd think that if that happened, he would have been having issues maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's good speculation, but it would still be nice to know what site he was actually visiting.
Yeah.
See it.
Well, bring it up on air next week. We'll have to if Jay Lee actually contacts me
and sends it in. We'll talk about it.
Solve the mystery. Because right now it's a bunch of speculation until we get the details.
Anything else from you, Daryl?
You said something else, but I don't remember what it was now. You were talking about the Chrome. It was something else that the guy was talking about.
Okay.
That's all I have for right now.
All right. Thanks for your call. Have a good evening.
Okay. Bye.
All right. So there's another call coming in. Good. 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites.
Well played, Groovehouse.
Well played.
The answer call being put through. So Groovehouse is answering the red phone, which looks, I guess they swapped out the handsets, but to me the red phone was always the station emergency phone. Like, uh-oh, we've got a problem. I guess that's not the case anymore.
Technology Bites, I have a problem.
Or we could have a problem. Although he doesn't look nearly as upset as if, you know, we actually had a problem.
He doesn't look like he's panicking.
No.
So that's good. So
Flicta doesn't look like he cares, so I'm assuming we're
Flicta
fine.
Flicta never looks like he cares. What are you talking about? Flicta is a synonym for apathy or something. Do you still have a problem with overstocked
right
alcohol at your house? Yeah. All right.
Flicta has too much freeze and beer at this place.
Too much beer. All right. 713-526-5738 Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Rick.
Rick, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
How's it going, everyone?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic.
What can we do for you?
I'm calling because first off, I wanted to comment. The last caller mentioned about Chrome kind of watching you on Firefox and other things, and I'd agree with that. It's part of the reason I stopped using Chrome myself. But my question for you is how do you feel about Windows phones, especially with the new 8.1 update and whatnot?
I have not played with the Windows phones. I don't know that anybody here has embraced the... I haven't embraced a Windows phone since, it's been probably 7 or 8 years.
I like the idea of it.
Windows Mobile.
Huh? Old Windows Mobile, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you're using a Windows PC, especially if you're using a Windows 8 PC or Windows 8.1 PC, having a Windows phone that ties in like that, I assume it's a similar experience to like having an iPhone and a Mac in the way that all the devices kind of tie together and share data.
I mean, to me, the handset is really important, too. Like, if there was an amazing handset that was on, you know, one phone OS, that might tempt me to switch over to that OS.
Well, related question for you then, the HTC One M8 has recently been made available in a Windows Phone variant, same exact hardware, but no longer just Android, both Windows Phone 8.1 and the Android whatever number version it's at now.
I like HTC hardware. I've been a fan of them. I'm kind of sad that LG is making the flagship Android phones now instead of HTC like they did for the first couple of revs. So you probably can't go wrong with them. It just comes down to, are you ready for a move to Windows? You know, are you mired in either, you know, iOS or an Android right now?
Oh, I'm actually a longtime Windows phone user. I just wanted to know your opinion.
No, I've had a
Windows phone since the HD7, also made by HTC. Now I have a Nokia, kind of a cheap model that I bought with no contract. And for the most part, I've been very happy with it. I was just kind of curious to see what your, I don't feel like they get enough love out there. Curious to see what your take was on the operating system.
Yeah, I haven't used it enough. I know Dwight had a trial one for a little while, and it was kind of fun to flip through that and kind of see what the UI was like, but I haven't had enough time with one to really to form an opinion. Although I think, you know, the more mobile operating systems there are out there, the better.
Very cool.
Yeah, I've got nothing against them specifically. I've really kind of gone the Apple way, and I know Barrett's more the Android way, but I haven't embraced any of the new Windows technology fully at this point in my life.
I know for me, I think what drove me to Windows Phone was not being so enamored with the closed ecosystem of Apple's.
The walled garden, as they call it.
The walled garden, so to speak. And, you know, granted, Microsoft has somewhat set up their own, you know, with the Windows Phone to come back at Apple. But I feel like it's a slightly more open walled garden.
It's a sugar-coated
Windows, and it drove me away from Android about a month after I got it. I couldn't stand it.
It's a walled garden with windows.
Some latticework you can see outside a little bit. Yeah.
Well, I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of the walled garden. I kind of like having you know, a monitored ecosystem where the different components play nicely with each other, you know, like a gated community.
Someone to make the homeless people leave after midnight.
Yeah. So, you know,
so it's like a finely manicured and coiffed, you know, garden.
Yeah.
As long as it's not, you know, done by, you know, insane people.
But, you know, if you like Windows, you like Windows. There's nothing, I don't think there's, you know, as long as it's, you know, a tool that does what you need it to do, I think that's the most important concept.
True, true. And, you know, it's funny, what drove me to Windows Phone was not only being frustrated with the Android system. I really, granted I had a low-end Android phone, but it just was a buggy nightmare. You know, being not so happy with that, but also being one of the rare dying breed of Zune users.
Oh. the original Zune or the second Zune?
I had a few Zunes, actually. I'm a real rare breed.
The second Zune with the Metro interface actually looked pretty nice. It was a pretty slick piece of hardware that maybe was kind of ripping off Apple to some degree. But it was actually a nice piece of hardware. The first Zune, I'm not so sure about, but the second Zune was nice.
Yeah, the Zune, I believe you're talking about the Zune HD, the touchscreen one with the tiles and everything. And,
it was like a Metro interface before it was the Metro interface.
Right, yeah. Now, they called it Metro, and they got sued by someone, and now it's no longer Metro, and yet everyone still calls it Metro. Zune was fantastic. I still have my Zune HD, and I still have Zune on my Windows 7 PC. On my Windows 8 PC, I'm using the Xbox Music service, you know, which is what Zune kind of turned into. But the whole Windows 8, Metro, Live Tiles, Windows Phone 8 was kind of birthed out of the experiment that was Zune. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm one of the few, you know, dying users of that. We're a little upset with some of the changes that they've made with the Windows Phone 8.1 that make it more in line with what users from Android or iOS were used to.
Yeah, I think a key driver on it is between iOS and Android, that's like 95% or more of the smartphone market right now.
Yeah.
And so Windows Phone is really in danger of becoming a rounding error, regardless of how well or poorly people think it works.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing is it really works fantastic. And again, being a longtime user, I've been a little disappointed with some of the changes because, you know, they're bringing it more in line with what other people expect, whereas I've been one of those who have always been outside of that, I never got the iOS. I didn't like Android. So I've been using Windows for years, and to me, the old way was the good way.
Unfortunately, you and your handful of friends can't support financially this whole business model, so they have to find a way to draw in more market share. So that's, for better or for worse, that's where it's going.
Yeah. So for all the listeners out there, I guess I'm beating the drum. The old, hey, check out the Windows Phone, but you might be surprised they've made some changes to it that have made it more what those who have used previously iOS or Android might expect.
I think the tough part for your sell on that is that first you have to find people who are really that unhappy with Android and having maybe the experience you did, or unhappy with iOS, which
they've been getting
better too. And so on Android, the fragmentation has been decreasing. And so until people get frustrated using it and start casting their eyes somewhere else and look past the other one. You know, if they're on iOS, what most people do, because we watched Dwight kind of debating himself about what he was going to do next, and it was pretty much, well, iOS or Android seemed to be where his major focus was, and Windows didn't even really get on the radar.
Yeah, and I think for most people it doesn't. You know, for me, and like the previous caller, I would say that the biggest reason I would never return to Android, I just don't trust Google anymore. But the reason I left it was because the handset I had was just awful.
Understood. Well, listen, we got a few more calls in the queue, it looks like, and we are running out of time, so we're going to move on to another caller, if that's okay.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right, well, thanks for being here.
Take care.
All right.
Keep on zooning.
Zuna, zuna, zoon. You know, if you're, you know, that's wrong being dedicated to your platform.
No, and we have been, I guess, in the past, somewhat guilty of Microsoft bashing. That I blame that on my Linux roots, but I want Linux to do well, and I also want Microsoft to do well, too.
Well, in this whole bring-your-own-device environment that's growing up around work,
that's no good.
I'm happy to see more Windows options because people come in and they want, you know, touchscreen, so they get a Windows 8 touchscreen tablet device, and it works with a lot of our stuff, which doesn't always work with Apple or Android.
Well, the Windows phones plug into, like LDAP and all the, you know, Exchange and all that.
As far as I know, yeah, absolutely. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we are going to speak with Peter.
Peter, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yeah, I've been a long time listening. I'm just calling back a couple of things. One is the Windows 8.1, I'm using it now, but compatibility-wise, like if you're having an Windows 8.1 operating system on your laptop or PC, there's nothing, you know, outstanding in compatibility or syncing. I mean, it takes a while. Certain things work, certain things don't work. And it could be some bugs, but they are bringing up, as you said, Android and iOS things. You're coming up to that standard, but they're late in this game, so I don't know what will happen in the next 5 years. Computing power is going to change tremendously. So the other thing I will say is, what do you all think about, and I want to be careful about this, because the person who really started talking about it is not, it's about quantum computing and tubing, you know? And the person who did some pioneering work, he's been missing for the last 10 years. No one knows where he is. So any comments on that? Any guidance? What do you think? Is it possible that they can merge this kind of quantum computing or cubing with HANA, in-memory computing, and really do some outstanding, you know, like quantum leap, actually? And I will hang up and listen. Thanks.
All right. Pete?
I think on quantum computing, on the plus side, this is like this, you know, what one of the last quantum computing calls we had was in the 90s, and it was somebody who was so early that it wasn't even worth talking about. But Google is actually developing its own quantum computer chips.
Yeah, they just got in the game just a couple of days ago, didn't they? They make some announcements, or even like earlier today, they made some announcements.
They have it's Google's quantum artificial intelligence team. Announced that they're going to develop their own quantum computer chips. So, if it's something that's going to work, if it's something that's going to expand and be useful, Google putting their muscle behind it is certainly a pretty strong sign, you know, that it's going to go somewhere. I think a lot of it, you know, when I look at it, a lot of it is kind of, you know, way above my pay grade as far as understanding how it's going to work, but apparently it can be very fast.
They're bringing in a lot. Google's bringing in a lot of talent. So they've got people coming in from UC Santa Barbara. They've got a pretty talented physics team coming in to deal with a lot of the issues that they're working with.
Of course, Google works on a lot of things because they're also working on defeating death. That was another recent story. So, you know, they don't shy away from big challenges, but
all right, our driverless car stuff isn't going so well. Let's look into defeating death. We'll fix it in software.
That way we don't have to make the driverless cars work quite as well.
All right, Groovehouse. Let's see, we have another call in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Let's take that. We'll go out the phone number one more time, 713-526-5738. We are in the final 8 or 9 minutes of the show, so we will see how this call goes. We might have time for one or two more, but we'll see. Groovehouse, who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak with Don.
Hey guys.
Hey.
You know, I've been listening, and up front in the program, I think it was Barrett or somebody commented that the Geek Meeting this Friday, he was going to delve a little bit into software-defined radio.
Yes, we're going to bring out an RTL, SDR, and some GNU radio and a few different things. So we'll have two different radios running.
Have you used the DVB-T dongle?
Yes. Those can be had for under $20. There are some that are selling for a lot more. Don't pay that because they're being marked up. So the whole idea behind this was touched on it last week. It is a satellite TV USB dongle for like 10 or 15, 20 bucks that was designed to work in the Asia market. And instead of, you know, designing all these really expensive chips to be able to decode this and then pass it off to USB, they just said, hey, we'll just deal with it in software. Let's grab the whole spectrum and then let the drivers on the computer decode everything, get the right frequencies, put it all together.
Right.
And so they came over here and they work great.
You might be preaching to the choir here a little bit, Bear. Mm-hmm. I've done SDR for a couple of years now, through amateur radio. A lot of amateur radio equipment is moving to software-defined radio instead of...
A lot of it's getting cheaper, too. You've got stuff like the Hack RF and Blade RF, which is coming down just for a few hundred bucks.
I attempted to bring an SDR radio down on Friday and let you see an official box that is actually designed...
What is it going to take to make you go all the way and do that?
The problem is plugging antennas into these things.
I know, which model is it?
It's made by Flex. Flex Radio makes Ida Austin, Flex Radio Corporation, was an early designer of software-defined radio, and it mostly was for the aviation defense markets initially. They make high-end premium radio equipment, but they got down into amateur radio as well, and they make about four or five models in amateur radio equipment. They have an introductory model. If you can go online and look at their website, it's called a Flex 1500, which is about an $800 radio, but it's just a small little box, a 4x4x4 box. And, of course, you run it with software on your laptop. But you got to plug antennas into these things to make them work, you know. And that's why I was asking about your dongle. You're going to have to hook some sort of an antenna that allow you to receive the appropriate frequencies.
A little bit. So the dongles that we're talking about, the antenna that it comes with actually tunes most of the spectrum. So I don't know how low it goes.
But you just push it into the end of the dongle.
Yeah, and this, it's like a little, I think it's a little reverse SMA connector possibly. But it's not that great of a thing. Now, we'll be bringing out a larger antenna to get up to the ACARS traffic.
But the dongle out of the box, like you say, it covers 64 to 1700 megahertz, which is all the TV frequencies that they're used in Europe for digital
TV. Radio, plane traffic.
Unfortunately, that dongle is not good for digital TV in the United States, and that's why you found you couldn't use it. But you can listen to the FM radio band and stuff like that right out of the box. Which you're going to do, I'm sure. But what I'll do is I've got a copy of QST Magazine, which is the big amateur radio magazine. They did a 6-page article on this back earlier this year, and I'll run some copies of this article off because it kind of describes the dongle you're talking about. Also, it describes putting antennas and stuff on these things so you can actually hear things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it has a bibliography here that includes a lot of the software to run it with, which you know about, Barrett, I'm sure. I mean, you've already been introduced to this stuff, but it might help people that need a guidance on some websites and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, no, that sounds cool. And I haven't seen that radio before yet either. I've got a Blade RF and an up converter and some stuff on the way. And we'll bring out a hammered up converter, too, which you can actually plug into that TV dongle to actually be able to listen to lower frequencies, too, so you can wind up that.
In this article, Barrett, it has a real simple 3-chip converter to use for high frequency, which is where you're going to hear a lot of short wave and amateur radio stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
But anyway, I'll bring some copies of this article. It might interest some of the people, and I'll try to make it to the geek meeting. So
sounds like a radio party. Sounds fun.
Absolutely. I'll bring the radio that I just mentioned, Barrett, but the problem is it needs a power supply, and it needs an antenna hooked up to it in order to make you hear something. So we could put a wire in back of it and listen to HF frequencies and stuff
like
that.
I'll have a couple of dipoles and maybe a Yagi out. We'll see what we've got. Whatever we can throw on the back of the motorcycle. Yeah. Well,
okay.
Cool. All right.
Very good, Friday. Thanks.
Have a good night. All right. Some good calls tonight. Appreciate that. I guess that's what happens when the radio actually broadcasts.
People can actually listen.
And they can actually tune in.
We're talking about radio on the radio. And now
that's
we're talking about radio on the radio.
That is so meta. All right, so we hope that you will join us this Friday night for the Technology Bites September Geek Gathering. Not September already. This year has just flown by. Okay, so come out to the Geek Gathering. We'll be gathering at cons if you need information on where it is, how to get there, what time, and all that. All that information is available at geekradio.com. So we invite you to go to the website and learn all about it. Come on out. Hang out with us. We will. Are you coming out, Groovehouse?
I think so. Gonna try and make it. I'm a maybe.
You're a maybe. All right. Flicker will be there. Barrett will be there. Katie Five will probably show up. We'll have a handful of people, and they have wine and beer and darts. Dwight won't be there.
Oh, he won't.
He said he wasn't coming. He's on vacation. Yeah,
we
I know.
Hope Katie Five will be there.
Huh?
We hope Katie Five will be.
Yeah, we haven't seen him on IRC.
Oh, hopefully he's all right. All right, so at any rate, we're going to get out of here. We thank you for tuning in. This has been another exciting episode of Technology Bites. I heard the Skype sound, so did we lose Pete in the last minute there? Great.
Perfect show.
Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Groovehouse.
got him back just in time.
Just in time.
Perfect.
Perfect show.
It's a pre-recorded Pete goodbye.
We need to get one of those. I think we got a pre-recorded I'm Pete. There he is.
There will be a KPFT benefit on Saturday, September 13th from 4 to 7 p.m. downtown at Beer Paredes, 500 Louisiana Street. $10 cover charge at the door benefiting KPFT includes Beer Paredes pizza buffet, music, dance, and perhaps even a wee nip of Tom Horan's own Irish whiskey. Proceeds help KPFT to continue to bring great programming to you. Again, KPFT benefit happening on Saturday, September 13th from 4 to 7 p.m. at Beer Paredes downtown, 500 Louisiana Street, the Alley Theater parking garage. We hope to see you there. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide. Find us on Twitter at KPFT or KPFT Houston on Facebook.
When you donate a car, truck, motorcycle, SUV, RV, or boat, we turn what is often a burden to many people into great educational programming. Join others in your community by donating a car and helping create opportunities for local arts, music, and culture to flourish. KPFT's vehicle donation program offers fast, free pickup and towing from anywhere, an easy donation process, and the best charitable tax deduction around. Call 1-855-KPFT-CAR or visit kpft.org to donate. Again, that's 1-855-KPFT-CAR to help out now. Thanks. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.